Dan.
What?
What gives you a close shave?
I'd have to say questioning Pochettino's team selection in a press conference.
Sounds rough. Well, you know what gives me a close shave?
What?
Harry's. And Harry's is the sponsor of the Tottenham Way this season. Harry's are the US shaving company moving over to the UK and hoping to make a big impact. If you go to harrys.com/Tottenham, you'll get your trial set for £2.95. Usually costs you £11.95. It helps us out and it helps keep the content free. For that £2.95, you get blades, a travel cover, shaving gel, a handle and a travel kit. Again, harrys.com/Tottenham. We both love it, don't we, Dan?
I've done it and it's really good.
It is absolutely
good. So I did it when we first had Harry's on about a month ago, and I just got my next set of razors, and it's really good. Recommend it.
Perfect. Harrys.com/Tottenham, £2.95 for your trial set. Enjoy the pod. Sean, I feel like we should apologise to you before we do go any further, because you've been on this, what, sixth time you've been on the Tottenham
Way?
Around
that.
Must be around five or six over the last 2.5 years that we've been doing this. And not once have you seen the inside of a studio.
I like the workmanlike feel of these places.
Yeah, Dan's kitchen this time.
Kitchen living room, please, dear friend.
Kitchen slash living room, yes, apologies. Welcome back, Sean. How are you, mate?
I'm good, you, mate?
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm a bit tired, but, you know, we persevere. Dan, you were saying earlier that you felt a bit December down.
I've actually had a second wind today.
Okay, good.
I felt really December down, and it's largely because I completely forgot about Dortmund. I thought this podcast was going to be a Swansea review and a Barnsley preview, and that made me feel very December Dan, especially having been at a wedding on Saturday. But when you reminded me that we had to talk about Dortmund, I felt a lot more perky, so I'm hopefully going to be on decent form.
Oh, bigging yourself up for that.
Well, I've promised a lot now, and yeah, I've got to deliver.
We've obviously got a bit of Dortmund to talk about. We've obviously got Swansea, but yeah, Barnsley's
going
to be...
We won't do much on Swansea. I wasn't there, and I haven't watched a great deal. So.
I watched it on catch-up. I recorded.
Why would you do that?
Well, yeah, that's a good point, Sean,
because he knows he'd get a massive bollocking if
he
didn't.
That's true. The last time this happened, Dan had a go at me off-air. This is what happens. Off-air, yeah. This is what happens when you're Dan's protégé. But
speaking of which,
you've been acting as a sort of Dan's, is protege the right words? I don't want to use lackey.
I like to think so. Bag carrier.
Yeah, that was the word you used. Yeah.
Understudy. No, you have been though. You've been with Dan on a few Spurs trips at Wembley this season.
A few adventures. The first was last season. We went to the Wembley council meeting, and that was about the Spurs getting permission to use the full capacity at Wembley, which seems a bit redundant now. but yeah, I went with Dan as a licensed journalist for the first time to Wembley for Spurs Burnley. That was a bit of a, would you say, eye-opening experience? I think it was like...
I don't know, you tell me.
I mean, I've done press work at Portsmouth before, and I can't really compare to that, because it was a stingy little desk at the top of a 500-year-old stand. But yeah, it was definitely, I think I understand the grasp of sports journalism in this field.
So Dan always talks about how difficult it is to sort of transition between fan and journalist, or rather there is no transition anymore. He feels he's very much journalist when he's watching the game. So you must be quite brand new to that. So seeing going to Burnley and a disappointing result last minute, you know, how do you react to the last minute goal going in against your team when you're in the press box?
I think the most annoying thing was that all of us in the press box had our stories ready to go, and then that's a sucker punch and you just feel the deflation.
So he's already thinking about it.
Yeah. That was my main thing when Wood scored. I didn't really think about Spurs till about 5 seconds. I was like, crap, we just conceded.
Yeah.
But yeah, I had stories ready to go about how Burnley's result at Stamford Bridge was a fluke and how Spurs got over the Wembley woes.
Does it put you off a little bit?
A little bit. I think it keeps you on edge a bit more, because I felt pressurised by wanting to get the work done. Obviously, I was trying to set myself my own deadlines within the match of how much I should have done after about 60 minutes, 70 minutes. I think you told me about 80 minutes was around the time that things should be wrapping up.
Yeah, I mean, I still think it's the hardest part of the job. It's still the one thing I struggle with most, I think.
It's so backwards as well to think of a when you look at a game of football and how much the drama how much drama can happen in the last 10 minutes and how much that can be the story, and yet you've kind of got to have your story ready, and whatever happens in that 10 minutes can shape it.
Well, a lot of the time you have your idea at half time and you just hope and pray that the second half is going to go in a similar vein, and that all the stuff you're thinking about, your kind of theme, if you like, your points, your analysis is just going to remain true after another 45 minutes of football. I mean, that's an extreme case. A lot of the time you do kind of, you want to have a really good idea of what you're going to write on about 60, 70 minutes, and I think that's what I said to Sean.
How bad would have journalists, I suppose this was a slightly different era, but when we were 3-0 up against United at half time in like 2001 or whenever it was, how much of a nightmare would that have been for reporters? Or does it not really matter?
It's a good question. I like to think there's a lot of journalists that would have known
what
United were and what
there were
Spurs 30,000
Spurs fans that knew exactly what was coming.
Yeah, and planned accordingly, so didn't write about the glorious win at half time.
That's brilliant.
It might be worth asking someone like Jerry Cox about that game, because I'm sure he was there. Someone who's got a lot of experience but was probably thrown slightly. I mean, the Man City FA Cup game is probably a better example.
Oh, yeah.
Because when, was it Barton who was sent off at half time? Yeah. That was probably a point where you thought, okay, I'm pretty sure there's no comeback in this game.
Wow, yeah. To think of where we are now, there's a lot. Well, there's bits and bobs to moan about Spurs at the moment, but to think whether that was, 2003 or something?
I can't remember.
Awful. Absolutely disgraceful. We'll speak about Dortmund in a sec, but Sean, you've been working for Crystal Palace as well. Speaking of sort of doom and gloom places to stay at the moment, you've been working for Crystal Palace, haven't you? In what capacity?
I was there on doing a bit of work experience with their social media team. So basically, it'd be like running at Spurs Official, but for Crystal Palace. So that was
how
fun.
Was that?
It was really, I guess, I say fun in one way, but it was really grueling at the same time because it was a completely new experience for me. I'd never worked within a football club like that before. And it's always weird to see what it's like on the other side, because you don't realise how much actually goes on within it until you're there or you hear really odd stories. I mean, so I was there for Frank de Boer's only win, which was a 2-1 Carabao Cup win against Ipswich.
Big.
But so throughout the week they had me putting stuff on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, writing up copy for the website.
Sounds good.
It was good, yeah. I mean, because they've got a whole, I say dedicated team, but there's not really many. I imagine bigger clubs have more, but they have their own kind of YouTube channel and they run a lot of good content on that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's well worth seeing both sides of it as well, because obviously when you came to Wembley for the Burnley game, when you're doing work experience with ESPN, you're very much literally on one side of the kind of rope when it comes to the mix zone, and then all the club officials and the players and everyone are milling around on the other side. And you have to work very closely with the club, but it is a very different job, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Being on the inside but the funny thing is, clubs would very much view themselves as kind of competitors when it comes to content. That's why, you know, some access they don't want to give you because they want it to be on Spurs TV or Crystal Palace YouTube. So you're almost doing the same job, but it is really two sides of a coin.
Yeah,
it's very different. I think doing, as a young journalist, if you want to do sports media, it's well worth doing both sides. And you might find that you have a better feel for one or the other. I've never worked for a club. And it'd be interesting to do, I think.
Just before we move on, you know Spurs TV or Spurs in-house TV channel thing? Halloween's just around the corner and Carl Walker's obviously left the club.
Tackling the big issues here.
Do we see anyone really filling those shoes of putting on a mask and not scaring Jan Vertonghen, but scaring every other member of the team?
The players keep bigging up how big of a character Serge Aurier is in the dressing room.
Yeah. Character.
Right back.
Yeah, that's Trippier was talking about that, wasn't he? He's saying Trippier doesn't really seem to know how to answer those questions at the moment, because he's his obviously direct rival for his position. And I think the quote was just like, yeah, he's really powerful and funny or something. It's like, what? There's two different questions that you've answered there, Kieran. But anyway, Aurier had his debut in midweek. which was the 3-1 win against Dortmund, which was landmark for a couple of reasons. I suppose it was our first win at Wembley this season. Probably our first win at Wembley for quite a while, isn't it?
Must be since the League Cup final.
Moscow, yeah, of course. Yeah. So he had a pretty tough opening game, if you like, as they all did. But we seemed to change our tactics a little bit. It felt a bit landmark for Pochettino as well, not just to beat a big giant in Europe, but to kind of do it under different terms than what he's used to. He's usually used to kind of squeezing the life out of opponents and just kind of overwhelming them. And it was quite unsettling as a fan for me to watch, because I looked at it and thought, we've got no control over this. And now everything was being bypassed. But everything we did offensively was pretty much perfect, and the exact way to beat Dortmund, I suppose, on the night. How did you guys see it? Did you see it as... Was it as big as that, or am I just overblowing it?
I think what you said just there resonates with what Kane said afterwards, and I'm jumping the gun a bit here. But you were saying how Spurs... I think it was Kane, wasn't it? It said Spurs' plan wasn't to play without the ball, it was to play with it, play the usual game. But it showed what Ben Davis called, after the Burnley game, street smarts.
Mm.
And so it's more encouraging when we play pressing teams, because we usually get absolutely ripped to shreds by sides like that, like Liverpool, like City, as we did last year. So I guess it's encouraging that we know how to handle these kind of games now. But I get your point, it was uncomfortable to watch. I don't think it ever will not be.
That first half was tough. I mean, we scored our two chances, pretty much. I don't think we had any other chances apart from Kane and Son. The goals. I don't recall any. It feels like a lifetime ago now, to be honest. But it, particularly Son and the way we utilised him and getting him high up the pitch and playing on the halfway line. I mean, the first goal was scored from a pass where he was in his own half and ran onto the ball. So it's just something that... Because you mentioned in pre-season, Dan, about how we used Sissoko against Juventus. In the pre-season friendly.
Did you
see that developing, maybe?
Yeah, against Juve, I thought Spurs played in a slightly different way, which was they did sit a bit deeper. They let Juve have possession and they tried to counter. And it was Sissoko that played on the left that game. And it was probably his kind of most encouraging performance before the couple of decent ones he's had this year. And I thought, obviously, it was Son and Kane who scored from that left channel against Dortmund, and I did think there were echoes of that Juve performance and the way Spurs played. And it was interesting hearing Kane's comments, because he did try to dismiss the idea that it was a tactical plan. He almost tried to suggest that it was an accident, like Dortmund had forced Spurs so deep just because they were so good at keeping the ball, and Spurs were creeping back. And at half time, Kane said, Pochettino said, you're too deep, you need to push up. And he then felt that the second half performance was much improved as a result of that. So, and Pochettino has kind of said a similar thing as well, which is that they didn't set out to play that way. So, you know, you do wonder if it was almost a complete accident. Like, is this a kind of tactical masterclass of the first half that was just a complete fluke? But I don't think so. I mean, things just don't tend to work out that way. And I think, you know, hopefully it was just a bit of pragmatism from Pochettino saying, look, we're at Wembley, we're playing at a team who's even better than we are at keeping the ball, even better than we are at pressing. So, you know, let's be a bit pragmatic here. Let's try and exploit the space. Let's exploit their weakness, which he obviously felt was that right-hand side.
Mm.
And, it worked a treat. I think it was a lucky performance in many ways, but you need a bit of luck.
Yeah, there was a lot of fortune in there, you know, the offside.
Yeah.
People say sort of evened out and stuff, but I definitely think second half we played a lot better and we looked more like the Spurs that I was used to, and that was quite encouraging. And to not just do that, but to score when we were on top as well and pressed and Kane won it back and stuff.
I mean, Pochettino said afterwards that he felt they played better against Monaco in the first game of last year and obviously lost that 2-1. Than they did last Wednesday when they won 3-1. And I think the Monaco performance was more of a Pochettino performance, wasn't it? But I hope that when Liverpool come to Wembley and when City come to Wembley, Spurs are a bit more pragmatic.
Yeah.
I think you said it last week, Dan, but about Son against Dortmund, that was the first real chance and he scored. and he had the first chance in the game against Monaco last year, and it was cleared off the line. Yeah. And we almost feel like if that had gone in, things might have gone better that night. And
yeah, completely.
It swung for us this time.
It kind of mirrored that in a way. Mm. I remember that chance Son had against Monaco really well, and it was cleared off the line. It was a bit of a tame finish, I thought. Yeah. He should have just wellied it into the back of the net. And I almost thought, you know, that was quite a sliding doors moment. Like, if that goes in, suddenly Wembley's rocking,
yeah.
and the atmosphere would have been amazing. And I do feel like Spurs would have gone on and probably beaten Monaco.
Yeah.
And then the whole Champions League campaign is completely different. Wembley suddenly is such a great place because they've got this big win there. And it obviously turned out differently, but he scored the chance against Monaco, Dortmund, which was far harder.
And hell of a goal, that, actually.
Yeah,
every single goal of the game was a bit of a belter, to be honest. Obviously, Son came in for Ali. The hand was forced a little bit with Ali being suspended, but it's quite an obvious go-to to just put Son in where Ali's missing. But they're completely different players, and Son's pace and his ability to stretch Dortmund was such a key aspect of why we ended up winning that game. So where do you see kind of Ali fitting back into that team? Because he came back in against Swansea, which we will come on to, but he is a bit off colour at the moment. He doesn't look particularly happy with himself and his football at the moment, but whereas Son kind of has that explosiveness about him. So where do we strike a balance? Is it a case of finding one or the other? Do we get both of them in there? What does this say about our squad? Like, what can we get out of that?
I remember the last time I came on, it was in December, and Ali was going through a terrible run of form. And I said on that maybe we should think about dropping him, so we'd give him a kick up the arse. And then he went on to score something ridiculous, like 10-10.
I think it was just after Hull, and he had another pretty poor performance, and then he absolutely stormed it for about 3.5 months. Yeah.
So I guess the question is, do we keep playing him through the poor form, or do we drop him to let him know you're not invincible here? But I think at the weekend we had the issue of Pochettino certainly had the issue of how can we fit Son and Ali in the same team whilst keeping most of our key players on the pitch, and it ended up shoehorning Son into a left wing back kind of role,
which is
not ideal
and tried and tested and failed, really. Yeah. Dan, what do you think? How do you, because you've always said that you believe that Pochettino's that sort of manager that believes in getting in the 11 players that are most on form, no matter what the formation, and there's all this transitional periods, and it doesn't matter about the shape, it changes as you go up the pitch and stuff like this. But
I basically got Stockholm syndrome. Just repeat the nonsense he comes out with. I think what Pochettino said about the transfer window, his goal was to strengthen the squad so that players like Ali and Kane were feeling a bit of pressure, and Eriksen, and I guess Alderweireld. Whereas last year, they were just so guaranteed a place. There was absolutely no competition on them. And I think after the Dortmund game, Ali would have come into training and maybe for the first time in a couple of years thought, well, actually, I'm not absolutely guaranteed to start against Swansea anymore. And he can't have been feeling that for a while because he's just been so good. Even when he was in that spell at the beginning of last season when he was really off colour, I think he still started every game when he was fit. So that's a good thing, and I don't think it's really a problem. It's to use a cliche, it's a nice problem for Pochettino to have. I think they're quite different players, and it just gives Spurs another option, and it's another sign that the squad's a bit stronger.
It's totally up to Ali now as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think, you know, we've been saying on this pod for like 2 years that Ali's really young. You've got to remember that he's still 21. He's gonna have bad patches, and there's not many or any players in the world who are like consistently at their best when they're 21. It takes a few more years. And I think there's also a case that, you know, he had this amazing strength of, you know, making those late runs into the box and, you know, always finding space. His movement was amazing and picking up on things, and his teams will be so much more aware of that now.
Yeah.
Like, they're not going to let him, you know, get free at the back post. They're going to put two or three men on him and just crowd him out, and so he's got to adapt his game and be a bit cleverer and pop up in different areas, and I think he's still kind of learning to do that, and we have seen him think outside the box, kind of pulling wide a bit more this season. I think he's just desperate to find space and get in the game and influence the game, and it will take him a few matches to do that, but I think he's such a good and clever player, he will work it out and he'll come back to form.
And he wants his Real Madrid move. So.
He absolutely loves scoring goals and being the match winner and being the main man. So he's not going to allow this malaise to continue much longer.
Yeah. Right at the very end, Vertonghen was sent off for, I'm going to say an elbow. It wasn't really an elbow. It was kind of a flat,
raising of the
it?
Arms.
Claw
yeah,
to the
cause
mouth.
Because he tripped,
wasn't
didn't he? And he put his hands out almost in a balanced way. But the ball was behind him, and so he had to turn, and suddenly, was it Goetze?
Yeah,
his face was right there.
It was absolutely a yellow card, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, it was a second yellow, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was a second yellow. Goetze, at the time I thought, oh, that's harsh. And I think I probably, I'm sure you could dig out a tweet of mine saying that didn't look like a sending off. But I thought we'd be given a straight red. I look back later, and he's kind of flailed an arm into Goetze's mouth, apparently rearranged some of his teeth.
Isn't the manager?
Yeah, it's definitely a yellow card.
Yeah, fair enough.
Albeit unlucky.
It's a one game ban, isn't it?
Mm.
So he's out of Apoel away, which is next game next week, isn't it, actually?
Yeah.
What do we do? Because the three at the back seem to deal with Dortmund reasonably well. Their movement and their high press was pretty intensive, but they stood up to it. But Apoel are not Borussia Dortmund, are they? So does he just come straight out, play Alderweireld and Davinson Sanchez in a back four, and then maybe put in Son and... Actually, no, this is a point, because Ali's not about. So usually when we play that back four, it's so we can play Son as well as Eriksen, Ali and Kane. But I think the way that I'm going with this is Sissoko starting in Cyprus.
I think a lot depends on tomorrow night, the Barnsley game. Presumably Foyth will get a debut. If he looks really comfortable, albeit against Barnsley, then I think there'll definitely be temptation just to slot him into the back three.
How risky is that then, that in a game that the two games that we've said it, you said it last week about Dortmund being the game that we needed to win at home, because Real Madrid are likely to top it, Apoel are likely to be the whipping boys. So how risky is it to have a back five?
Yeah, it's risky, but... The obvious choice would be to put Dier in there, but I don't think Wanyama's going to be fit enough to play. But it could be Winks that comes in, obviously. Dembele or Sissoko midfield options as well. I think he'll stick with the back three, is what I'm trying to say.
Do you
think? Yeah, I think so. I think he Pochettino probably... For me, I think he thinks the back three may be the way to get through this Champions League group, and it's kind of a weapon he didn't have last year.
Yeah,
I think if you look at the way forward, I think the record signing of Sanchez proves that. Because almost we have to, it's a reshuffle at the back as well as Toby moving from the centre to the right, and that allows a kind of different play because Sanchez can play almost as a sweeper.
Yeah,
and I think he'll want to keep that formation the same as it is.
But someone's got coming on the left, haven't they? It just feels a little bit
less. It's a
balanced.
Bit niggly. I suppose the other option is Ben Davis goes in there, and then Son stays at left wing back, but Poch has never shown any inclination to use Davis as a third centre back, even though he's really good there for Wales.
Yeah, fair enough.
So I think just the fact that we've discussed it and raised lots of possibilities is, I think, in itself a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's move on to Swansea. Do you think that the Swansea game took a bit of the shine off of Dortmund? It must have. That goes without saying, surely.
Just a point of interest, I did not go to Swansea, as I said, and I've only watched extended highlights. So I might leave this to...
As a 0-0, mate.
To you two.
I think you're...
It's a good one to miss, I think.
Yeah. I think so as well. I mean, yeah. Sure, let's go with you then. I mean, if we had 20... Somebody said it was 23 shots on goal.
We had a lot, but they wouldn't make too many really good chances. I think when Kane hit the bar from close range, that was probably the best we had. And then we had a couple of free kicks, a couple of volleys from distance. But Swansea came to do their job. They knew... They've just lost their two biggest attacking threats. They know that for now, until they gel together as a team again, getting points is going to be coming from the back rather than from the front.
Yeah.
And I think Paul Clement has got them really well organised there. When we played them in, was it April? We didn't break them down until 88 minutes.
True. Yeah,
and
true.
maybe that's just it. Maybe Swansea are a good side defensively, and we're just got a bit of a headache with them.
Yeah, we've now not won three games at Wembley, or let's call it at home, in the league, whereas last season we only failed to win two games at White Hart Lane. It's anyone that was still under any illusions about how difficult this season was going to be needs only to look at Chelsea, Burnley and Swansea at home and see that we've got 2 points out of those fixtures, where last season we got 9. You know, it's simple basic maths, you know. Ben Lewis, at Ben Lewis 0795, friend of the pod. He's been banging this drum for a little while, but it's definitely worth asking. Can we please talk about this being the third season running that Poch is tinkering before Christmas will likely prove costly?
Third season running.
He's saying third season running, so he's right. Talking about the two title-winning seasons. So the first one was...
Title-winning seasons?
Title-challenging seasons.
If only,
yeah. I think we've proved costly. Obviously, his first season at Spurs was tinkering because he had to tinker. Terrible players to deal with, but it felt a little bit more settled. And I think Ali is a good symptom of this. Actually, Ali doesn't really get going until sort of December. We didn't last season, and it looked kind of similar this season as well. But the tinkering with how we play and how we attack and progress up the pitch and stuff, he does seem to be dicking about a little bit again, and he messed about against Swansea as well, didn't he? Like you say, Son at left wing back, Trippier ended up at left wing back at the end of the game as well. So it feels like there's simpler solutions than what he's offering at the moment. Is that fair?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this isn't the first time this season either that he's done this kind of stuff. In the Chelsea game, we played a weird 4-3-3 with Ali way out on the left, and he didn't get involved at all. And you do wonder why, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And it does feel like he's tinkering for the sake of trying to fit, as you said earlier, the 11 best players in the team. You don't really need to do that. Would you rather have the 11 best but be top heavy and have to bring someone back, or would you rather have a balanced system and have someone to come from the bench? Because I feel like that's what we missed at the weekend. I mean, did we bring on Dembele? No, he's sitting on the bench, and that was something that caused uproar.
I mean, we've got a midweek where you would expect none of the first team to start.
Yeah.
Certainly not to start, maybe come on towards the end of it. Then we've got West Ham, and it's West Ham, Appwell and Bournemouth in a week there. Now, that strikes me as a time to maybe rotate and look at, you know, against Appwell, if you put Son left wing back, the likelihood is it will be okay. May not be pretty, and you may only get away with a 1-0 or something like that, but it just feels like the strangest time that he could have done it. Is it maybe, I don't want to say arrogance, that's the wrong word to use for it, but does he maybe look at it and think, okay, we've beaten Dortmund, we're on the up, we should be able to just sort of edge past with this team that I'm sort of patching together and putting out?
It was so important though to keep the momentum from that Dortmund win and beat Swansea. I mean, however you look at it, it does feel like momentum is just ground to a halt again at Wembley, and all the old questions are back. All the old anxieties have kind of reared their head again. So I think that was I don't think he was looking at it like that. I think that was the wrong way to do it. I think when I looked at the Swansea team on Twitter when I was in the middle of this wedding, it did just strike me as really strange. I know I think he said that Ben Davis had a knock, so that explains why he didn't start. But I just thought it was bizarre if he was rested, given Tuesday night's game where you could easily put Walker Peters at left wing back or Son if he wanted to. And yeah, of course, Poch has to take some responsibility for it, for bad results, as I'm sure he will. I think what I would say for him, and the same is true of last season, is there's a lot of niggly little problems in the squad, and it was completely the same last season. After the international break, loads of players came back with knocks and fatigue, and they've been all over the world, and I think he had a real problem putting the squad back together again, particularly when Kane and Alderweireld were injured for that really bad run of form. And there were so many small things, small headaches every week, and I almost feel like it's quite similar now. I mean, I think Winks isn't really fit to start, he's got this foot problem and he's still giving him pain. There's obviously something wrong with Dembele, although he's reacting very badly to questions about it because he's not started two league games in a row, and that's really unusual.
Wanyama is
obviously not fit. I think Trippier was kind of rushed back, and he's probably still working to find his rhythm. And you've got Lamelo and Rose, and Llorente broke his arm, I think, in pre-season, so he's not fit at all.
It's a really long list.
Yeah, and it just kind of goes on and on and on.
It's a bit retro. This is about mid-90s. Yeah.
But I think so, in Poch's defence, he is trying to make sure that he's getting 11 fully fit players on the pitch. As Sean said, I think he always wants to get the best 11 players on there, and maybe occasionally he's guilty of shoehorning. But I do think a lot of this tinkering is kind of enforced, and he's thinking about four competitions, and it's, you know, it comes ultimately back to Spurs squad again, which is stronger than it was, but still not as strong as they'd like.
We know why we signed Gazzaniga now, two keepers on the bench, down to the bare bones, Gov. We've got another question, Coach Reggie Dunlop, which I enjoyed, at Chiefs head coach. Am I crazy for not being upset by Saturday? Tend to recall frustrating draws with West Bromwich Albion and Bournemouth last autumn, and it worked out okay. I mean, it depends on what your version of okay is, because you win those two games and we probably win the league. So it's a balance, isn't it? And we've had frustrating draws before. I think there is I think a lot of it is us suddenly, like I say, maybe people that weren't convinced by Wembley being this much of a problem for a good team like Spurs, and we are still a good team, but there seems to be this bit of a realisation of just how difficult this season could be, and this is teams that we were trouncing on the likes of last season. And you do worry when you look at the form of Man City, the form of Man United, what Liverpool can do to you on their day. I think there's a bit of fear now. We do just need like a 4-5-0 against Bournemouth in a couple of weeks or something.
Another problem with Pochettino players is they always take a while to get warmed up, don't they?
Yeah.
And it feels like this period of the season's, you know, been flat for the last few years, and it just takes a while for them to get in that steamroller mode that they got in from about December last year, which was just brilliant.
You know, so is it as simple as saying if we were at White Hart Lane we'd probably be top of the league now?
I don't think so, because as I just said, it takes a while to get in that groove even at White Hart Lane. I think it might be something to do with the late signings is obviously a factor, and I think there's something Pochettino referenced today in his press conference. He said, yeah, look, you know, a lot of the players came in at the end of the transfer window. He knows that's a factor, but it's still the way the club wants to work. It might be a fitness thing as well. I mean, it's not said so much nowadays, but it's always been true that kind of fitness and physicality has been a big part of the way he wants to play. So I think there are lots of little pieces to put together, and then when it clicks, it really works. And that happened a bit later than he would have liked last year. And, you know, I guess he's hoping it's going to happen really soon. Otherwise, they'll be in a similar position of just playing catch up already. Yeah. They already are, really.
Can I ask you, Sean? I've been thinking about this for a couple of weeks, just, and it's one of those just interesting questions that's a bit pie in the sky. But someone offered
you. Would you rather
be
4 foot Raker?
We'll get on to that. If you were offered, and it's not going to happen because of how results have gone, but if you were offered the exact same results as we had last season, and it's a perfect reversal of home and away form, so this season we go to Old Trafford and we win. We go to the Etihad, we win. We go to the Emirates and we win. We go to Stamford Bridge and we win. And we draw Anfield still. We have a complete reversal when those results happen, but you have to go to Wembley and watch us toil like the way we did away from home against West Brom and Bournemouth and teams like that. Would you take that this year?
I think I probably would. I think because we're only going to be here for a year, and the narrative is writing itself at the moment that Wembley's got this curse for us, our woes go on. Whereas if we get those big away wins, that's a huge number of scalps that we're claiming there. Then people will talk about the kind of character that Spurs show on the travels. And maybe, again, it is just Wembley that's the problem for them. They have these big game tactics that they can work on.
It sounds like a stupid question, but the more you think about it, and the more you think, oh, I'd have to go to Wembley and watch us but for 90 minutes.
I think it's different because you said if I knew that we were going to do that. If I didn't know we were going to do that, then I'd probably no, I wouldn't. That doesn't sound very appetizing at all.
Well, you just wouldn't go. Yeah, just save yourself the time and the money, to be honest. Yeah. Okay. Anything more on Swansea, Dan?
Not for me, Tom.
No. Good. Let's move on to Barnsley, who are just being taken over.
They're playing Moneyball.
Yeah, Billy Bean, is that his name? What is this about? Who is this guy?
I think it's a overseas consortium. I want to say Chinese, but I'm not completely sure. Chinese, okay. And he's 10% involved or something, but he's going to sit on the board. So he's the bloke that popularised Moneyball as a means to success in the MLB.
Baseball league.
And I can't remember which team now. But it was obviously quite a kind of Levy-esque strategy, I suppose, which was don't buy. I haven't actually seen the film or read the books. I'm slightly blagging it here, but
sell low.
as far as I know, it's basically you buy players kind of based on stats, and I think Brentford gave them a go, didn't they? And
yeah, definitely.
Not without success either.
No,
I think they were doing all right in the Championship at the time. Basically, I don't know much about it, but it's a technique for recruitment, and it does sound like something that Daniel Levy might be in favour of, because it generally means you don't spend huge amounts of money on.
It's basically what he's been doing, if you ask me, really.
Yeah, I mean, quite possibly, but just to a less kind of forensic degree. But yeah, I don't think that will have a big bearing on tomorrow night's game.
I was going to say, do you get the impression we're filling time a little bit on this?
I think there's lots to talk about for tomorrow, and I'll happily talk you through today's quite interesting press conference
if you
wish.
Yeah, thank you, Dan. No, do, because Poch mentioned. Well, how exactly did he say this? Because the headline on your article for ESPN earlier was
evoked rage.
It did a little bit. Didn't someone call you gutter journalism or something like that? Which I was like, hold on, it's a bit strong.
That happens every week, and it's amply justified.
Yeah.
No.
Well, you will take Sean along with you.
Gutter journalism. Drag
him down with me. Yeah. If Poch was asked about his priorities, or he was asked, do Spurs need to win a cup? And obviously it being a pre-League Cup third round press conference, he just explained that he would love to win any cup and it's important to try and win every game, of course, said all the right things, but he also explained very clearly that, you know, in his view, a club the size of Tottenham should be trying to win the Premier League and Champions League as priorities, in that order, so Premier League first, then the Champions League. And really, you know, reading between the lines, he basically said he's not a subscriber to the FA Cup magic, and he referenced Wigan and said, well, look, they won the FA Cup and where are they now? And I think his view of that is the suggestion kind of really was that, you know, anyone can win the FA Cup or League Cup. You don't have to be a big club to win it. You can get the luck of the draw.
Okay.
Whereas to win the Champions League or Premier League, you have to be a great team.
Which is completely fair. How much of that, though, is running before you can walk? Because City's first trophy was the FA Cup, and when they'd suddenly gone from nothing to everything, and from expectation to demand, or aspiration to demand rather, and that first trophy was the FA Cup, and I think that plays. I think that makes a huge difference. Mourinho, we've said it. I think we do it every League Cup preview that we do on this podcast. We say. And you mentioned the Brian Clough thing.
I'm not going to do it again.
Yeah, but it is true, isn't it? There's clearly merit in it. So, all right, so Sean, as a fan, how do you feel about that? Hearing a manager, does it make you feel, all right, fair enough, he wants to aim for the big stuff? Or is there a part of you just thinks, give fans what they want and give us what we want, which is silverware? We don't want to come second anymore. We want to win silverware.
I think there's probably no... there wasn't any right way for him to answer this question without boiling someone's piss. I think if he said, we want to challenge on four fronts, someone will say, oh, what about rotation? What about our lack of squad depth? But I do ultimately think, we do need to win a trophy, mainly because I'm very sick and tired of all the fans replying to comments with, but how many trophies have you won?
But it's
justified to an extent. But I mean, we are a good team, but it would be nice to have some real trophy days to remember.
A way to put it is we won more in the 90s than we have done in the last 20 years. Or in the 2 decades that came after the 90s. And the 90s was
sick.
Always... But the people always reference the 90s. They always say, oh, remember how bad we were in the 90s. And we were. We were awful. And it's a different playing field now, don't get me wrong. But when you look at the trophies that have been winnable in that time, and again, we talk about every single time, and we always cite Wigan and all these other teams, and Swansea winning the League Cup and stuff like that. These are trophies that people still talk about 2008 because it was a cup final that we went and won. Doesn't matter, it's Chelsea and we came from behind and it was extra time and it was Berbatov and Keane and stuff, but it's still a trophy, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Team Utonia became a club legend because of it, you know, and it just feels like he's missing a bit of a trick here. And alright, he maybe doesn't just subscribe to the magic of it, but it's like we're not... Winning it isn't magic anymore. Winning it is business. Winning it is what Chelsea, City, United, Arsenal... Arsenal have been in crisis for 10 years and they've won the fucking thing 3 times out of the last 5 years, 4 years. I mean, this is crazy, is it not? Like, we should be doing this.
You could argue that what we say about the players, that once they win a trophy, they have this taste for glory. That Pochettino, once he gets his first trophy as a manager, he'll have it as well. Because he's still not won anything.
Yeah.
So does he not have it? Or has he just got... the Bill Nick aims so high that even in failure there's an echo of glory. But I would like some glory, actual glory, Poch.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. And I think it, more than anything, it was a stupid thing to say.
Right.
Because basically you can think that privately, and you can discuss that with Jesus Perez over a cup of mate or whatever they do. But
what's mate?
It's like a herbal Argentinian tea thing.
Is it nice?
It's all right. It's quite bitter. It's like really caffeinated. When I drink it, I go mental.
No wonder Poch always looks a bit grumpy.
Yeah. Well, no, I think he's used to it.
Oh.
Argentinians have quite a... So why are we talking about mate?
Don't know. It's better than talking about Barnsley.
Yeah, I think it was basically a stupid thing to say, and you can think that privately, but the message should always be quite a boring one, that we really want to win a trophy, and it doesn't matter what trophy, and we're going to go and try and win them all. But I also think that is Poch's attitude. He will try and win every game. He will try and win the League Cup. But I think it's more of a case of what he was trying to say is he doesn't want to let the pursuit of those competitions get in the way of the Premier League and Champions League. And he's a pragmatist. He knows that his squad isn't good enough to win 4 competitions.
Fair enough.
So there will come a time, inevitably, when Spurs are, if they get to a certain point, they're away at Liverpool in the League Cup quarterfinals and they're home to Liverpool, for the sake of argument, in the league a few days later, and he's going to pick the team accordingly. Yeah. And I think that is about as much as you can really read into it, but I'm a subscriber to the Cloughy and Mourinho way, which is that get a trophy under your belts, just get one, get the League Cup done in February.
Mm.
You've got Europe secured, takes a bit of pressure off, and it's a great way to sort of teach the players how to win. But that's not Pochettino's view.
Yeah, it's a bit... Levy doesn't mind it either.
Bardi
at Bardi TFC from the Fighting Cock: is Marcus Edwards a figment of our collective imagination? Has Pochettino confirmed he's going to have no part to play?
Yeah, and he's playing for the under-23s right now.
Right, okay.
As we speak. So it's a bit of a strange one. He was asked today, which young player is going to be involved, and he volunteered Tashaun Oakley-Booth as a player who would be involved in the 18, I suspect.
Who did well in pre-season, is that right, in America?
Bench.
Yeah.
Did reasonably well.
Yeah, someone told me that the only player Pochettino thought did well in pre-season was him.
Okay.
The young players.
Okay.
So the guys who went on the trip. So he's obviously really in the good books at the moment. I think he'll come off the bench for his competitive debut. Think you can expect Vorm, Foyth, Llorente, probably Winks to start, but no Edwards. And I think there's something up.
Yeah.
I was told, don't take my word for this, because I'm
inside info. Yeah. Sure.
I was told that Pochettino has an issue with Edwards' attitude. Okay. Again, don't take my word for that, but
this has been a kind of an on-off thing for a while, though, isn't it? Because he was, by all accounts, coveted by City when he was 15, 16. They were talking about, like, before he could sign a pro contract, City were very much in for him, and we eventually convinced him to stay. I mean, this is all, a lot of this comes from, like, Windy, perhaps, on the Fighting Cock. Like, you get slight insights into this a bit. But I don't know. I don't know enough. Like,
Pochettino's explanation today was that he needs to physically mature and get his confidence back. Now, that to me doesn't really hold water as an explanation, because first of all, he played this stage last year in the League Cup third round, almost exactly this week, against Gillingham, and before that game, that was when Pochettino compared him to Messi, and you imagine that he's not physically smaller or weaker than he was a year ago, even though he has had a lot of injury problems. When it comes to confidence, he's just come off the back of, I think, 2 goals against Dortmund in a quite convincing win in the UEFA Youth League, a really good performance against Man United, a man of the match performance in the FA Youth Cup, a brilliant performance for England under-17s, or maybe even being under-19s, in fact.
They won a tournament.
Under-17s, he won the Euros, and then I think he was playing for the under-18s, under-19s. Yeah. He scored a direct free kick a couple of weeks ago, so he's not short of confidence. And I suspect it is something more. If it was down to me, and it was just based on what I'd seen, he's the kind of player I'd literally put on the bench for every game. Yeah. Now, I'm at that point, because he can obviously score a direct free kick, which no one at Spurs has done for about 2.5 years. Yeah, he can obviously win a penalty, which Spurs haven't done for a while.
Yeah.
And he can obviously beat a man and potentially change a game. So I don't see what the harm would be in having him on the bench for a game like Swansea and Burnley, when you need one last throw of the dice and it's got to be a bit of a gamble. But there's obviously something going on. I don't think it's football.
It's not going to be too much of a pressurised evening as well, not apart from the fact that it's Barnsley at Wembley, maybe it will be, but it's likely to be, 25? Like, similar to Juventus in pre-season, do you think?
I don't know. I suppose they're pushing the tickets to kind of fiver, so I might get a bit of an upset. It's going to be a strange one, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Ghent was a £5 a night.
That was a European knockout game.
Yeah, but, you know...
And Ghent brought about 9,000 themselves.
True, but, I mean, we still did quite well.
That was about 80,000.
When you
second Barnes, they're going to bring 20,000 and storm Wembley. Can I stop?
You genuinely wouldn't even notice it, would you? Would not notice it. I don't know. It is going to be a strange old night, I think, and a long one as well. It's going to be a late evening.
I mean, I quite enjoy those kind of evenings, because I think There's new things to talk about, and Foyth, for instance, might be excellent. You know, it might be the coming of age of Nkudu. Who knows?
Forgot about GKN. Yeah,
GK's going to play, I think Mauricio said as well. So
yeah, absolutely. So we have got West Ham on Saturday, which I did not know until someone mentioned. In fact, until we had the question in from David at Flaming_Mo. What are your predictions for Saturday's 1-0 defeat at West Ham? It feels tricky, isn't it?
Spurs are good away.
Maybe
it's 2-0 win, and West Ham are shit at home.
We only played them about 4 months ago, wasn't it? When we went to the Olympic Stadium and lost 1-0. That was my birthday, actually. Yeah, that's fun. If you believe Sky, it ended the title challenge, but no such stakes this time. They kind of settled themselves a little bit recently, haven't they? They've stopped conceding goals. Did they played West Brom at the weekend and drew 0-0. They beat Huddersfield 2-0 on Monday Night Football last week as well. I mean, this is after people were really piling it on Bilic, and they conceded something like something stupid, like 100 goals in his 55 games in charge or something like that. It's insane. They were averaging between 2 and 3 goals a game. Something seems to have maybe turned the corner a bit. Do you think that we can smash through that, or are you predicting a very difficult game? Early kickoff as well.
There's probably an argument that if they had lost their last two, they'd probably we'd probably be in more trouble because they always get up for this, and it's almost like their clutch moment for Bilic particularly. Because not a lot of their fans were saying that the only reason he kept the job in the summer was because they beat us. They had so that
the
big
night. Worst thing that happened to them because he's a bad manager.
But
I still think they'd take it because it was such a glorious night for them.
Well, the two times they've beaten us at, they beat us at home in the last two seasons, haven't they?
Yeah, 1-0 each.
1-0
time.
Each time, and both of them, again, if you're according to Sky, ended our title challenge. But and I know it sounds a bit stupid, but both of those being night games feels quite significant, because if you give West Ham fans a chance to get riled up, and it's particularly against Spurs, which is their final, you know, that's not even that much of a dig anymore. It's the fixture that they want every single season. But this time it's 12:30 kickoff in a shit stadium that if you don't give it the chance to get whipped up into an atmosphere, it's terrible. And we are decent away from home. Well, we seemingly look decent away from home. So it's a good opportunity, this, I feel.
I'm reminded of the Wayne Rooney tweet, "It's not nice having to down pasta at 9 a.m. And I feel like...
What, for early game?
Yeah. I feel like you said, if the West Ham fans don't have that much time to get prepared for it, if the players will come in and maybe a little bit groggy, we'll be there knowing from last year we want to avenge that kind of defeat. Then, yeah, we could be really up for it as well.
We're looking at a week's rest as well. Dan, how do you see this one going?
Well, mate, I think Spurs will be okay. It is with West Ham. I think the mistake Spurs have made the last two seasons there is they've gone, conceded a relatively early... No, they conceded that's, early 2 years ago.
It was quite late last year.
Mm-hmm. But you know, either way, they've gone and conceded the first goal both times. I think it just need to do really what happened at Everton and Newcastle, which were both really professional performances against teams, I think, who are at a similar level to West Ham. Just go and make sure Spurs keep it really tight at the back, get the first goal whenever it happens to be, silence the crowd a bit, and I think Bilic is a poor manager. I think West Ham are a poor team. I tipped them to go down.
I just want
Spurs to back up that outlandish prediction. I also predicted Spurs for the title. Spurs to back up that prediction with a kind of another professional away performance.
I think West Ham are stuck trying to find a system which suits their three main men at the moment, which are Hernandez, Carroll and Antonio. They're kind of playing this three-prong attack force where...
Hernandez has been out wide, hasn't
he? When you've got people like Carroll and Hernandez who need to be central to thrive, and Antonio is just... God, I don't know what his position actually is anymore.
Yeah, it's not clear.
He's almost like a wide target man or something.
Yeah, it's very strange. A lot of people sort of tipped him to be maybe a left field signing for Spurs at some point. I feel like
if Harry Redknapp was still in charge, he'd be trying to sign him. That's the kind of signing he'd be going for.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. Let's do a couple more questions. We had quite a few people asking if you'd rather be 4 foot or 8 foot. Sean, can you explain this?
Why that's come about?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a guy on our course called James, and he comes into lectures and he comes up with really weird hypothetical questions, and that's the one that stuck out most, and we tried asking more people about it. I guess for me on Twitter, the domain, the reach is a bit bigger.
Not just Twitter though, is
from
it?
From my point of view, every time I did a Facebook Live in America, or have done one, any kind of live thing since, Sean's always watching it, asking that, and I always like get put off and stifle a giggle, and it's really annoying. But there was one where I literally didn't speak for about 10 seconds. I was like, after it came up. I think I was in like Orlando or something.
Instagram Live. So you do
on
Facebook
Live,
yeah.
You can see the comments.
Yeah, and Instagram, so you've done it.
I've asked numerous celebrities, footballers.
What's the aim? Will you stop when someone...
I'll stop when someone gives me a bloody answer. I just want to know.
I've already said I'd rather be 4 foot.
You'd rather... Oh, yeah.
Talk about the Mongolian midget.
Yeah.
I've been very clear on this.
That's
because
true.
I think there are... Oh, I actually don't want to go into too much.
Well, I wasn't asking you again. I was just asking where, you know, the origins of this, what is turning into a Spurs meme. Because if you go on any player's Instagram Live after a game, when they're doing it, or when Sissoko's walking around France on transfer deadline day or something. Your comment will always come up there.
Yeah, I don't know how to feel about that. Well, I'm also a bit ashamed.
Well, that's Twitter for you, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it could be much worse.
Yeah, and also, I'm going to ask a question of this. How do you feel about on the first weekend where Spurs have gone goalless at home for, is it 18 months? Something like that? Yes. Last time was January 2016.
It was against Leicester.
Leicester at home. How do you feel on that weekend where Vincent Janssen, Paulinho and Clinton and Jai all score for their new clubs? Clinton and Jai, mate, 5 in 3 games.
Oh, dear. I will just say that it genuinely looked like Pochettino didn't know that Janssen scored today, which was quite funny.
Oh, because he's only on loan, isn't he?
It was put to him that Janssen has scored on his second appearance for Fenner or whatever it was. And he was just like, oh, yeah, okay, well.
Who is Janssen?
Yeah, like, great news for him. He doesn't give a fuck.
No, and why would you?
I don't know, it's a bit strong, but
he doesn't.
He possibly doesn't give a fuck.
I think he definitely doesn't give a fuck, really. Okay, great. Let's wrap this up then. So, John, thank you very much for coming down. Where can we find your work?
You can find it at SeanWalsh_97 and all my links to my
work. That was too quick. No one would have heard that.
Okay.
Enunciate, Sean. This is the next
this
lesson.
This is the problem I have.
This is the next lesson that Dan's giving you. This is the master and the apprentice in front of me. What a privilege it is to be here to witness it.
My mind speaks quicker than my mouth.
SeanWalsh_97.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you are Dan_KP.
Correct.
Find their body of work there. Thank you very much for joining us this week. We'll see you next week. Come on, you Spurs. It's been a while since I've done that.